Chapter 16. Death's Interview. The secure staging room was a closet. Mara had been inside enough supply closets to know one by smell. Disinfectant, cardboard, metal shelving, damp mop head. The New York version had better locks and a ward mine burned into the concrete near the door, but the shelves still held paper towels, bottled water, three kinds of tape, and a plastic bin labeled MISC with the confidence of a person who had stopped caring. Wong stepped through last and closed the portal before the ambulance bay could follow them. The silence after was immediate. The portal took the ambulance bay with it. Seattle rain, Mina swearing at Wong's grocery choices, patients calling from open rooms. What remained was old pipes humming in the wall and Naya breathing too fast beside a shelf of folded drop cloths. Mara set her bag on the floor. "This is a closet," Naya said. "Secure staging room," Wong said. "I know what brooms look like." "Then avoid the brooms." Monica moved to the only small window, which showed a brick wall, a strip of wet pavement, and the side mirror of a parked van. She looked better in bad light than anyone had a right to. Asha looked worse. Her hospital discharge packet stuck out of her coat pocket where she had folded it too many times. Mara checked exits.
One door back into the service corridor, one high window, useless unless everyone suddenly became thinner and less attached to bone structure. The second portal was gone. If the room filled with smoke or panic, their best route was through one ordinary door and around every stupid thing someone had stored in front of it. A coil of extension cord on the lower shelf could trip someone in a rush. The mop bucket had wheels that would become a problem if bumped. She moved the bucket with her foot. Wong noticed and kept it to himself. That improved Mara's opinion of him by half an inch. "We stay here 12 minutes," he said. "Then we move to a private transit point. From there, the route becomes less direct."
"Less direct than a closet?" Naya asked.
"Yes."
"Comforting."
Asha had her phone out already, reading. "Elysis Group is moving." Mara turned. The footage loaded in fragments. Rain, St. Bridget's and Axe, people crossing a parking lot in uneven clusters, some with backpacks, some with no coat, one elderly man in hospital slippers and a blanket. Two volunteers tried to organize vehicles and failed because the crowd kept splitting around them. Elias stood near the side door, speaking softly to a woman with a cane, while people angled around him the way water angled around a drain.
"How many?" Monica asked.
"Too many for his plan," Asha said.
"Does he have a plan?" Naya asked. No one answered quickly enough. Wong checked his own phone. Airports, bus terminals, ports, private vehicles. Some are responding to copycat posts. Some think they are supposed to meet him in person. Some are using the word Vormir without knowing what it means. Naya's face went flat. Great. Mass casualty pilgrimage. Mara crouched and opened her bag. Trauma shears, gauze, gloves, tourniquets. Too little for a crowd. Always too little for a crowd. That was the old math. You could fill a rig, a bay, a gym, a city, and the body would still find ways to arrive faster than supply. Asha said, "We need to intercept at the first choke point." "We need to keep moving," Wong said. "If the last witnesses gather around any known route to Vormir, the attention will include more than human authorities." Monica looked away from the window. Who else noticed? The wrong people, the predictable people, several people who should have stayed theoretical. Mara pulled on a pair of gloves and flexed her fingers. That's a line people use before something terrible walks through a wall. "Nothing is walking through this wall," Wong said. The wall knocked once. Everyone went still. Mara looked at Wong. He looked annoyed before he looked alarmed, which told her the knock had not come from one of his wards.
"The sound came again. From the concrete behind Mara's left shoulder. 4 taps. Nia whispered, "Ovek?" Mara heard the siren then. It started under the pipes, thin and far away. New York had sirens. Every city had sirens. This one had Seattle rain in it. It had wet glass, and the scream of a monitor, and the drag of tires that had lost their argument with the road. The closet tilted. Asha took one step toward her. "Mara, stay here." "That is medically unconvincing. Good thing I'm not asking for clearance."
Mara stood, one hand on the shelf until the room stopped moving. The concrete walls showed a new door, handleless, hingeless, just a seam in the paint and a strip of red-orange light at the bottom, like ambulance flash under a closed curtain. Wong's voice sharpened, "Do not open that." Mara looked at him. He had one hand raised, fingers arranged for a spell he had not yet cast. His face had lost every trace of closet irritation. "What is it?" Nia asked. Monica answered, quiet, "An edge." The siren rose, then cut off. Mara hated the silence more. Behind the seam, someone spoke in a woman's voice. "Mara Vale." The voice was quiet and utterly undramatic. It carried no threat at all, which made the back of Mara's neck go cold.
Wong said, "If she wants a conversation, she can have it here." The voice on the other side said, "No." Mara reached for the seam. Wong caught her wrist without gripping hard. "You do not owe every door your hand." "I know." "Do you?" That landed harder than she wanted it to. Mara looked at the red-orange line under the door. Her body remembered reaching for Dan and becoming ash before she found him. Her body remembered all the people she had reached for after, because apparently dying and returning did not cure that habit. "No," she said, "but this one knows my name." Wong held her eyes for 1 second longer, then released her. 3 minutes, he said. "If the room changes temperature, I pull you out. If I scream, I pull you out faster." Mara pushed the seam. The closet opened into the ambulance. Asterisk. It was not the ambulance. Mara knew that immediately. The rig had been destroyed. Ray Alvarez had died in the crash. Dan Keene had returned at the crash site, with blood in his mouth and a heart that still needed hands. Mara had crawled through rain and broken glass and the wrong year. The ambulance existed in insurance photographs, memorial arguments, and whatever part of her nervous system had never accepted that the scene was cleared.
Still, the place beyond the door had the rig's dimensions. Bench seat, cabinets, monitor, oxygen, the blue strap across the cot, the small metal lip near the floor where Mara had caught her boot on bad nights and sworn at no one. Red-orange light moved over every surface in a slow pulse, but nothing outside the windows could be seen except black water. The woman sat where Dan had lain. She looked maybe 30 and maybe older than the first wound. Dark hair, green-black coat, boots with mud at the soles, though the ambulance floor was dry. Her hands rested open on her knees. There was dirt beneath one fingernail, and a small crescent scar near the base of her thumb. Skeleton, robe, storybook threat, ending, none of those fit her. She looked like someone who had waited beside too many beds and remembered every name afterward. "Close the door," she said. Mara kept it open. The woman glanced past her toward the closet. "Your sorcerer is ready to be unreasonable." "He's had a long day."
"So have you." Mara kept one foot over the threshold.
"Are you death?"
"Yes." The answer was so plain that Mara hated it.
"Are you here to take me?"
"If I had come for that, you would not have heard me knock."
"That's supposed to be comforting?"
"No."
Death looked at the open door until Mara understood that the interview would not begin while she was halfway between rooms. Mara stepped inside. The door closed behind her without sound. She forced herself to breathe normally. Four in, hold, four out. Breathing exercises helped when the threat was panic. They helped less when the threat sat on an ambulance cot and wore the face of every ending the universe had ever collected. Death studied the cabinets with mild interest. You kept 3 rolls of tape in the left drawer, she said. Mara looked, despite herself. The left drawer was closed. Ray said you hoarded it. Mara's mouth went dry. Don't. Death's attention returned to her. All right. Agreement, without push or theatrical cruelty, was worse. Mara crossed her arms. What do you want? An interview? For what? Accuracy? Try again. Death's mouth curved, too small to become warmth. You have been near enough to triage to know accuracy is mercy before it becomes paperwork. Mara held her answer behind her teeth. The monitor above the cot clicked on. Green lines crawled across black glass. 3 ugly beats. A pause. Dan's rhythm. Mara's hands curled.
Death looked at the monitor, then back to her. Daniel Keene's heart had not finished failing. You knew that. Yes. You could have kept him alive. Before Ray was gone. Before the rig drifted left. Before the truck. Before the next second. Mara swallowed. The red-orange light moved over Death's face, and for a breath, the woman looked tired. Daniel Keene's heart had not finished failing. You knew that. Yes. You could have kept him alive. Before Ray was gone, before the rig drifted left, before the truck, before the next second. Mara swallowed. The red-orange light moved over Death's face, and for a breath, the woman looked tired. Raymond Alvarez, Death said. Ray. Ray, Death said, accepting the correction. Left foot on the brake, right hand leaving the wheel. He thought of his daughters before he understood the road had used up the second he had left. Mara looked away. The ambulance walls offered nowhere better to put her eyes. Tell my girls I tried, Death said. I know what he said. Daniel heard it after. You heard it through Daniel. Elias heard it as evidence. Dr. Menon wrote it into a case boundary. Everyone has used Ray's last thought to prove something. Mara's anger rose fast. And you haven't? I kept it from becoming failure. That stopped her. Death's voice stayed level. He tried. The road kept moving. The snap kept moving. The truck kept moving. I cared enough to know the difference. Mara's throat hurt. She had nowhere useful to put that. The monitor gave 3 beats again, then the pause.
Do you know whose hand you escaped? Death asked. There it was. The question they had been circling since the first orange dream. Mara felt it arrive in her body before she answered. Yours. Yes. And the stones. The stone did not have a hand. It had a command. Same result? No, Death said. The ambulance light snapped red across her eyes. For the first time, something old moved under the calm. No. A hand can let go. Mara breathed through her nose. Death looked at the monitor again. My hand was there because your ending had become possible. Possible, not deserved or chosen. The driver was gone. The vehicle had committed. The patient under your hands was dying and still salvageable, which is a cruel combination. Your body was already inside the next second. Bone, glass, cabinet, pressure. You know. Mara did know. She had known before the truck hit. She had known angle and speed and useless straps and the bright inventory of what would break first. The knowledge had lived in her for 5 years without time passing around it.
Then orange light took you, Death said. It took Daniel Keene. It left Ray in the crash because his second had already crossed the line. It left the truck driver, who lived and then spent 5 years wishing the reports would stop saying unavoidable. It left the girls who had to hear tried as a consolation prize. Stop. Death stopped. Mara hated that too. She turned toward the cabinets, opened the left drawer, and found the tape. 3 rolls, of course. She shut it harder than necessary. If you're trying to make me feel guilty, you're late. I am not interested in guilt. Everyone says that right before they hand you some. Elias Crow is interested in guilt. Systems are interested in guilt. Guilt makes the living easy to steer. Mara looked at her. Death folded her hands. You thought I came to collect a debt? Didn't you? Debt is what the living call a wound when they want someone else to keep bleeding on schedule. It should have sounded like comfort. It landed colder than that. Then what are we? Mara asked. Interrupted. That simple? Nothing about interruption is simple. The ambulance shuddered once as if the road under it still existed. Mara reached for the overhead rail by reflex. Death stayed balanced on the bench seat.
The word misclaimed is useful, Death said. It is also dangerous. Claimed by whom? Misfiled by whom? Returned to whom? Every answer becomes a handle. Your doctor uses case numbers because they let her help without drowning. Your sorcerer uses containment because he has seen doors open the wrong way. Your governments use custody. Your councils use preservation. Your counselor uses purpose. And you? I use names. Mara thought of Ovek at the fence, the strips, the call and answer, names that could move without entering a child's mouth. Names can be handles, too. Yes. Death seemed pleased by the objection, or maybe simply relieved that Mara had made it. That is why I came to you. Because I object? Because you still know the difference between helping someone breathe and making them breathe for your reasons. Mara laughed once. It sounded bad in the small space. You have a lot of faith in a person who packed 2 tourniquets for a space trip. I have no faith in you. Great. Faith asks too much of the person being believed in. I have a record. Mara's laugh died. Death touched the cot mail with 1 finger. The ambulance shifted. For 1 second, the cot held Dan Keen. Blue fingers, ring, mouth moving around Elena. Then he was gone.
For 1 second, the driver's seat held Ray's shoulder slack against the belt. Then, empty. For 1 second, Mira saw herself from behind, 1 hand braced, 1 hand reaching, neck exposed to the cold patient presence leaning through the rig. Then the ambulance was empty again, except for Death. Mira's knees wanted to bend. She locked them straight. "Do not use Ray to make me go with you," she said. Death's eyes softened, and Mira almost preferred the oldness. "Ray is not asking you to go anywhere." Mira closed her mouth. "He is dead," Death said. "His ending belongs to him, not to you, not to Daniel, not to the driver of the truck, not to the daughters who needed more than tried and received it anyway. You may carry witness. You may carry grief. You may carry the task of telling the truth when someone rewrites him as absence or failure. You do not carry his ending." Mrs. Kim's voice moved through Mira's memory with a paper sack of rice and dry socks. "Do not carry my daughter for me." Mira looked at the black water beyond the ambulance windows. "Then why do I hear him?" "Because the room remembers him with you." Ovek's words, translated badly and correctly. "Can that stop?" Death did not answer fast enough. Mira turned back. "That's a yes or no question."
"No," Death said. "Not by pretending the room is empty." "Then how?" "By reaching the place where the room is still open and refusing to become its door." The word door made the ambulance colder. Mara heard the gym in St. Brigid's Annex. Vormir,
Vormir, Vormir. She saw Elias at the side door, not leading, and the crowd moving around him anyway. Elias, she said. He believes he is listening. He's moving sick people toward a cosmic gravesite. Yes, so stop him. Death tilted her head. Do you want me to? The question carried no challenge. That made it worse. Mara imagined the annex falling silent, the chant cut off, bodies stilled, a room full of people who had almost died, finally dying because the rightful claimant had been asked to settle the dispute. Her stomach turned. No. Good. Don't sound proud of me. I am relieved. Mara stared. Death looked toward the black water. The dead are easy to keep. The living are difficult. They continue making jurisdictional arguments with their feet. Mara's mouth tried for a smile, then gave up. You said you came because we're still being taken, Mara said. Yes. By who? By everyone who finds your wound useful. That's not an answer. It is the beginning of one.
The ambulance light pulsed again. This time, the red-orange became gold at the edges. Soul stone gold. Mara knew it without wanting to know it. Death watched the color move. Something bright has noticed the pieces you carry. Bright. A man made to hear the stone before he hears people. He will call containment mercy. He will mean it. Adam Warlock? Death's glance sharpened. Your sorcerer has been briefing you. He mutters while pretending not to. Then listen when he worries. I do. Listen when Monica sees absence. I do. Listen when Asha says a thing is survivable. I do. And when Elias gives them a beautiful line, ask who holds the ledger. You? Ask anyway. And if the answer is you?
Death came close enough that Mara could see water beading on the mud at her boot heel. Then ask whether I am protecting an ending or stealing one. Mara's breath caught. Death lifted one hand. Mara did not step back. The hand stopped a few inches from her chest, over the place where the siren lived. Cold moved through the air but did not touch her. Do you know why your body keeps reading this as an emergency? Death asked. Because it is one. Because you survived by interruption, and every part of you trained to answer interruption with action. Useful. Dangerous. Elias will use that. So will the Bright One. So will the thing between categories when it notices the door is almost built. Thing between categories? Not today. Convenient. Merciful. The word soured in Death's mouth. Death lowered her hand. Do not bring me a crowd. I'm not bringing you anyone. Good. I'm going to keep them alive. Better. Is that what you want? Death looked past her, toward the place where the closet should be. What I want has mattered less than you think. That sounds lonely. The words came out before Mara could stop them.
For the first time, Death's face changed completely. Grief would have been easier to name. Surprise, too. This was recognition, maybe. As if loneliness was a language every ending understood, but few living mouths spoke plainly. It is exact, Death said. The ambulance door behind Mara clicked. The interview was ending. Panic rose in her, stupid and sudden. Wait! Death waited. Mara hated that she had asked. Ray, she said. Death's face gentled in a way Mara could not forgive, yet. He is not in the ambulance. I know. He is not at Vormir waiting for you to find him. Mara nodded once, because speech would have cracked. If you hear him there, Death said, ask what is using his voice. The monitor went dark.
The black water outside the windows drained into ordinary night. Death reached past Mara and opened the door. The closet waited on the other side. Naya crying silently. Asha with one hand pressed against the wall as if trying to diagnose concrete. Monica lit faintly at the edges. Wong holding a spell ready and looking like he would very much enjoy filing a complaint with someone impossible. Mara looked back. Death was still standing in the ambulance, one hand on the door. "Do you know whose hand you escaped?" Death asked again.
This time Mara understood the question had more than one answer. "Mine," Mara said. Death smiled then, small, brief, gone before Mara could decide whether it was kind. "Go." Mara stepped through. The closet smelled like paper towels and panic. Wong shut the door that was no longer there with a motion that made the air fold flat. The wall became concrete again. The ward line on the floor sparked once, then settled into dull burn marks. Nia wiped her face with a sleeve of her jacket. "Was that her?" Mara leaned one hand against the shelf. Her legs were steady in the technical sense that they still held. "Yeah." Asha's doctor face tried to assemble itself and failed to find all the pieces. "Did she touch you?" "No." "Did she threaten you?" Mara thought about that. "No." Wong looked unhappy with every available answer. "That is not necessarily better." "I know." Monica came closer. "What did she say?" Mara looked at Nia first. Nia's fear was trying to become anger, because anger gave her somewhere to stand. "She didn't say Tessa was waiting," Mara said. Nia flinched, then nodded. "Okay." "She didn't say Ray was waiting either." "Okay," Nia said again, quieter.
Asha exhaled through her nose. "Then what did she say?" "The dead people don't become luggage because we survived near them." Wong's expression changed by 1 degree. Mara kept going before the words could turn into something polished. "She said Elias is using guilt, whether he means to or not. She said something bright noticed the pieces we carry and will call containment mercy. She said not to bring her a crowd." "Adam," Monica said. Wong muttered something in a language Mara did not know. "That sounded rude," Nia said. "Accurate," Wong said. Asha took her phone out. Her hands shook once before she made them stop. "We need to document exact wording." "Later." "Mara." "Later," Mara said, and heard the paramedic authority in her own voice. "Right now, we move. Elias has people in the open. If Death is telling me not to bring her a crowd, I'm taking that as useful operational advice." Wong looked at her for a long second. Then he nodded. "We leave now." The 12-minute hold had become irrelevant. Wong opened the service door into a corridor with better lighting and worse carpet. A man in the security uniform from the closet portal stood at the end holding a clipboard and pretending none of this was above his pay grade. Monica went first, already on her phone. Asha followed with Nia close beside her.
Mara picked up her bag. The siren under the world was quiet. For 3 steps, she heard only the building, pipes, shoes, a cartwheel squeaking somewhere down the hall, Wong speaking clipped instructions into his phone. Then a real ambulance passed outside on the street. The sound rose through the wall, ordinary and urgent. Mara stopped walking. The black water was gone. So was the red-orange shore and Ray at the edge of the call. Only a vehicle moved through traffic towards somebody who needed help. The quiet lasted 2 breaths. On the third, beneath the fading siren, the pole answered from far ahead. Voromir. The shore where cost was counted. The room still open. Mara adjusted the strap of her bag. Asha looked back. "Are you all right?" "Yes," rose automatically. She swallowed it. "We get to Elias before he makes them a door," she said. Then she kept moving.